You're listening to After the Storm, Where the Healing Begins on UK Health Radio. I'm Brian D. Smith, founder of Grief to Growth and a certified grief guide, life coach, and author. This part of my journey began after the passing of my 15-year-old daughter, Shayna. So I'm doing the work too. Each week, we explore the journey through grief, not just surviving loss, but discovering who you're becoming on the other side of it. This is where the healing begins. When we hear the word grief, most of us picture a funeral, black clothes, a casket, flowers that'll be dead by Thursday. And grief is that. I'm not going to pretend otherwise. But if that's the only place we're allowed to use that word grief, if we reserve it only for the moments that come with a death certificate, then we're missing out most of what's actually happening to people. In fact, we're missing most of what's happening to you. So today, I want to widen the definition of grief. Not to take anything away from the weight of losing someone you love, but to make sure that we're actually seeing all of grief. Because I think a lot of people are walking around carrying things they've never been given permission to call grief. And that matters, because you can't heal what you can't name. Let me ask you something. Have you ever lost a marriage, a long relationship that you thought was going to be your life? Have you ever lost your health, gotten a diagnosis, or had your body stop doing what it used to do and had to grieve the person that you were before that happened? Have you ever lost a job that wasn't just a job? It was how you understood yourself, how you got up in the morning, how you answered the question, what do you do? And when it was gone, you didn't just lose the income, you lost the identity. Have you ever lost a future, the children who didn't come, the life you planned that didn't happen, the version of yourself you were supposed to become? Have you ever lost a place, a home, a neighborhood, a country, and felt something you couldn't quite name but couldn't quite shake either? Have you ever watched someone you love start to leave before they've actually left? Maybe it's a cancer diagnosis. Maybe it's dementia. It's called anticipatory grief. The slow goodbye before the goodbye. Caring for a parent with dementia, watching a diagnosis take someone piece by piece, being present for the long ending. All of that is grief, and I've experienced some of that myself. I've been through a divorce that felt like the ending of one life. I've been fired from a job and felt like I wasn't the person, the provider, the father that I wanted to be. There's a concept in grief education that's called disenfranchised grief. It's a term coined by a researcher named Kenneth Doka. It describes the losses that society doesn't officially recognize, the ones you don't get bereavement leave for, the ones where people don't bring casseroles to your door. How about the pet who was your closest companion for 15 years? And don't tell me that's a small loss. I've talked to enough people to know what losing an animal can do to a person. In fact, I've lost pets myself. In my grief coaching, I had someone come to me, and he said he had lost his best friend. And that's what he had said on the intake form. So as we got together, we were talking. He was talking about, you know, his loss, and he also mentioned losing a cat. I thought, this poor guy, he's lost his best friend, and he's lost a cat. But it turns out his best friend was his cat, and that was the reason why he came to me. He wanted to feel heard. He wanted to feel understood. I've had a couple of clients that have come to me because of losing a cat or losing a dog. That losing of a pet, the unconditional presence, the daily rhythm, the one creature in your life who was just glad you came home, and then one day they're not there, don't tell me that's not a big loss. We can be closer to our pets than we are to a lot of humans. How about the miscarriage that nobody at work knew about? You went home one night carrying a future and came back the next morning without it. And you sat at your desk and you answered emails. How about the estrangement from a parent who is still alive? You're grieving someone you can't even talk about as a loss because they haven't died. But something has. The relationship you needed. The parent you deserved. I've talked to parents whose children are estranged, and they frankly don't know whether their children are alive or dead, but they can't really mourn them as if they're dead because they don't know. They just don't communicate with them. How about the ex-partner you're not supposed to mourn because the relationship ended badly, or because too much time has passed, or because you're the one that left and that person passes away? You're still allowed to grieve that. All of that counts. And I want to say this clearly, and I want to know that I really mean this. I'm not saying that these losses are equal. In fact, we can't equate losses. Sometimes people will try to equate losing a child or compare losing a child to losing a spouse. It's going to be different for everybody. And I'm going to say this very clearly. Losing a child is not like losing a job, okay? You can always go out and get another job. You can't go out and get another child, that same child. I know what a losing a child is, and I'm not going to stand here and tell you that all loss is the same. But here's what is the same. What's the same is what loss does to a human nervous system, what loss does to a human spirit, the searching, the disorientation, the way your life has a shape one day and a completely different shape the next. And nobody around you seems to notice that everything has changed. The mechanism is a lot more alike than it is different. And the path through, the actual work of metabolizing a loss and finding out who you are on the other side of it, that's much more alike than different too. So that's why I want to address that here on this program after the storm, because we want to acknowledge all the different types of grief that we can go through. So if you came to the show carrying something different that doesn't have an official name, I want you to hear this, that counts. You're allowed to call it grief because that's what it is. And if you maybe said, this show isn't for me because I haven't lost a person, I'm sure if you've lived here on this planet long enough, you've had one of these losses I've talked about or something different. Let's talk about invisible loss, the grief that you didn't know you had. I want to go even deeper because there's a category of loss that's harder to see than any of the ones that I just described, believe it or not. I interviewed a grief educator on my Grief to Growth podcast a couple of years back. This was in 2024. Her name is Christina Rasmussen. She wrote a book called Invisible Loss. And Christina gave language to something I've been observing for years without being able to really name it precisely. The way that Christina frames invisible loss is the grief that we carry without even realizing it. Now, again, unlike the losses I just described, which at least have a shape, an event, a before and an after, invisible loss comes from experiences that society doesn't acknowledge as significant. And because no one handed us a sympathy card, we never really processed them. We just filed them somewhere and we moved on, or we thought we moved on. And this conversation with Christina really opened my eyes about some of these invisible losses that we all go through. These losses are tied to what Christina calls moments of impact. Moments when we felt abandoned, we felt disregarded, we felt isolated, or we felt rejected. These moments change the way we see ourselves. And because they're not attached to a clear, definable event, because there's no funeral, there's no diagnosis, no formal ending, we don't think to grieve them. We just absorb them and we carry them around with us. And you may remember me saying that grief is not really the problem. It's the metabolizing of the grief that we need to do. It's the grief that's stuck in our body that becomes the problem. So when we just absorb these losses and we just carry them around with us, they don't get metabolized. They don't get to be carried out and they can fester. So think about what some of these losses might look like. Think about the classroom humiliation that made you decide at, say, 9 years old, that you're the kind of person that gets laughed at. Now, you never examined that decision. You don't remember making that decision, but you built a life around it. What about the parent who was physically present but emotionally absent? Now, not a single dramatic event, but just a thousand small moments of not being seen by that parent, not being acknowledged, not being told that you're loved or that they're proud of you. What about saying something that mattered to you and watching it land nowhere? You didn't call that a loss. You didn't call these things losses. You called it childhood. But all these things add up. The dream that you gave up on so quietly that nobody noticed, including you, you just stopped mentioning it one day. You stopped letting yourself want it. And some part of you went quiet that's been quiet ever since. How about that friendship that ended without explanation? They just pulled away. No fight, no conversation, no closure. Just stop calling. Just stop texting. And for years afterward, you wondered, what did I do? Well, that wondering is grief. Christina told me a story from her own life that I keep coming back to. She was in New York City at an event with fellow authors. She got invited to a fancy dinner party, a big, big step up in her social ladder. And right before they were going to leave to go to the party, the host came up to her and said, "I'm sorry, but I have to uninvite you." No explanation, just you're not wanted here. Now, Christina says that moment hit her in a way that surprised her. All at once, she felt inadequate. She felt ashamed. She felt small. A dinner that she didn't even get to go to became something that stayed with her for a long time. Something similar happened to me. When Christina stole the story, I came back to it, and I didn't realize at the time it happened that it was one of those invisible losses. I was supposed to introduce someone at an event, a big conference, and this was a very high-level, well-known person, and I was going to get the honor of being on the stage to introduce them. And I prepared my introduction, and this person I considered to be a friend, and right before I was going to go on stage introduce them, someone else came up to me and said, I won't name him, but this person says they want me to introduce them instead of you. That hit me like it was really surprising how disappointed I was. I felt like I wasn't important enough. I wasn't big enough to introduce this person. And when Christina named that for me, it really helped me understand that was one of those invisible losses. But here's what she understands about her event now. This wasn't really about the dinner. The dinner just touched something that had been accumulating for a long time. Every previous moment of rejection, every time that Christina felt like she wasn't enough, the dinner was just a thing that activated all of it. And that is the same way it was for me. Now, that's how invisible loss works. It's rarely about the specific event. It's about what that incident wakes up in us. And these losses stack. And that's the part that most grief education misses completely. We tend to treat each loss as a separate event, something to get over, to get through, and to put behind us. But the human psyche doesn't work that way. Every unprocessed loss makes the next one heavier. Every time we dismiss our own pain, it's not that big of a deal. Other people have it worse. We actually add to this pile, and we carry all this around with us. Christina calls the result of all this accumulated, unacknowledged loss the waiting room, the space between the life you left behind and the life you could be living. You're not dead, but you're not fully alive either. You're just waiting. You're waiting for something to shift. You're waiting for the right time. You're waiting to feel like yourself again. And a lot of people have been in the waiting room for years, some for decades. And they've adapted to it so thoroughly, they've started to think it's just their personality. I'm just someone who doesn't take risks. I'm just someone who keeps to themselves. I'm just not someone that things work out for. Have you found yourself saying these things to yourself and thinking this is just who you are? Well, it's because of these invisible losses that you're carrying around. This is not your personality. That's the accumulated loss that never got named.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
So, what does Unpriced Loss do to you? This is a health show, right? So let's talk about what carrying all this actually costs. There's a researcher named Bessel van der Kolk. He wrote a book called The Body Keeps the Score. And his work has been one of the most important contributions to our understanding of trauma and loss in the last at least 30 years. We're going to spend a whole episode on the body and grief a few weeks from now. But the short version of it is this. What we don't metabolize emotionally, the body stores physically. And when I say metabolize, I'm using the word like as we metabolize food. We take our food in, it gets broken down, it turns into energy, we have waste product, but the food moves through us. When we breathe in air, the air gets gets exchanged, it provides us oxygen, we let out carbon dioxide. So that's what I'm talking about with grief. These losses that get stored in the body, they have to be metabolized, they have to be worked through and released. The grief that doesn't move through us doesn't disappear as much as we might like to think it does. It goes somewhere. It goes into the tissue. It goes into the nervous system. It goes into the immune system, into the way that we sleep or we don't sleep, the way that we eat or we don't eat, the way we connect with people or the way we pull away from them. That grief is manifest in many, many different ways until we actually deal with it. Now, Christina describes three personas that emerge from unprocessed loss. And I find this really useful because it helps people locate where they are. And that's without judgment, right? This is just as information. So the first persona is the survivor. This is a part of you that stepped in during hard times and kept you going. And it did its job. The survivor is genuinely protective. It says, don't go out there. Don't risk that. Don't trust too quickly. At some point in your life, that was the right voice to listen to. That's the voice that kept you safe. But here's the problem with some of these personas. And the problem with the survivor is this. It doesn't know how to stand down. It kept you safe during the emergency, but it's still running the same protocols now, long after the emergency has passed. So what do? You stay small. You stay cautious. You stay in the waiting room. Because at least in the waiting room, nothing new can hurt you. Now, the second persona is the watcher. And this is the part that can observe what's happening without being consumed by it. The inner wisdom. The voice that says, yes, this is hard. And you've been through hard things before, and you're still here. The watcher can hold the bigger picture. It doesn't need to fix anything. It just sees clearly. And the third persona is the thriver, the original self, the part of you that was curious and alive and said yes to things before the losses started stacking up. That thriver is still there, the original self. It's just quiet. It's just waiting to be invited back. So most people who are carrying a lot of invisible loss are living almost entirely from the survivor. The watcher gets in there occasionally. We might step back and observe without being consumed by it. But the thriver, the playful, alive, present version of you feels like a stranger to a lot of us. Or it feels like a memory of someone you used to be. That thriver wants to be released so you can be fully alive again. Christina talks about what she calls 5% steps. And I love that. I'm a big believer in baby steps. If you've ever heard me talk before, it's an old cliche. I remember from a movie called What About Bob, where there's a psychologist that's working with a guy and he's written a book, I believe it is, called Baby Steps. I'm a big believer in taking small, achievable steps. So I love Christina's talk about what she calls these 5% steps. Leaping, she says, is often too risky when you're in a vulnerable place. Instead, you take the next smallest possible move toward being present in your life again. You reach out to one person. You name one thing you lost that you've never named. You let yourself want something, even a little. Those incremental steps, there's a saying that a journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step. Momentum builds from small, true movements, not from grand gestures. And this applies to everything that I'm going to be talking about over the course of this program. When I talk about doing my GEMS program, which I mentioned last week, GEMS, the four things I do every day, I tell people, if you're going to say you want to start meditating, you don't start by meditating for 2 hours a day. You start by meditating 5 minutes a day. If you're going to start exercising and you haven't exercised in decades, you don't go out and try to run 6 miles. You might take a walk around the block a couple of times. So these small things that Christina talks about, these 5% steps, I think are really, really important. So just understanding what we're talking about, naming those invisible losses right now, just, oh yeah, that time, that really hurt me. That really hurt me. Oh, my parent that never acknowledged me. Yeah, that was something that kind of built up the survivor part of me. And then maybe letting the thriver out to play every once in a while, start to think about what could I do if I weren't so fearful, and maybe taking a little step there. So why are we so terrible about talking about grief? Because we are, let's face it. We're terrible to talk about grief, full stop. I just saw something this morning. So as I was preparing this, someone had posted about something called grief talk. And I guess a lot of people are putting their grief out on TikTok. And they're becoming very popular with, you know, hundreds of thousands of followers, people wanting to, I guess, vicariously look at their grief. But it goes back to, we really need to have our grief witnessed and seen. And I think people are desperate for that. So because we are so terrible about talking about grief, and the cultural script is feel grief for a reasonable amount of time. That's what people say. Feel it for a reasonable amount of time and then stop. And what's reasonable? Oh, I don't know. You get 3 bereavement days, or maybe it's 6 weeks, or maybe it's 6 months, but then stop and you get back to normal. You move on. And the people who don't move on fast enough, they're the problem. Well, this script is not just unhelpful, it's actively harmful. What it produces is a population of people carrying enormous amounts of unprocessed loss. And I picture this now as like these blobs of unprocessed junk in our spirit bodies, if you want to call it that. And these losses are invisible to people outside, and we've learned how to hide it. We've learned how to hide it from the people around us. We've learned how to hide it from ourselves, because we've been taught, either explicitly or implicitly, that grief has an expiration date and you're past it. I was just talking with someone last night who lost their daughter, and it's been a couple of years, and they feel like the people around them, their friends and their family, don't want to hear about it anymore. You know, it's like they think we're supposed to be over it. We should not be talking about our deceased loved ones after a certain amount of time. I mentioned this last week, and I'm going to keep bringing it up. Grief is not something that we get over. And I keep talking about processing grief, but I'm not saying that's ever going to all go away. I'm talking about processing some of these emotions that come along with grief, things like guilt and anger and fear, stuff like that. We want to process and move through. But grief itself is going to be a companion. But all that unprocessed loss, all those feelings, they have to go somewhere. So where do they go? They go into anxiety. They go into low-grade depression that gets labeled eventually as, this is just who I am. Like, we don't even realize we're in a depressed state anymore because it's just become the normal. Humans are really, really good at adapting, which is one of the ways we've been able to survive as long as we have as a species. We can adjust to almost any new normal. So that anxiety that you might be feeling, that low-grade depression, you may say, that's just who I am. That's not who you are. That's not who you need to be. This unprocessed loss goes into the immune system. It goes into your relationships. It goes into the way that you parent, the way that you stop trying to get new things or good things. And you tell yourself, I'm just being realistic. I can't have that. So I'm just not even going to try anymore. If you've been carrying a loss that doesn't have a name, you're not being dramatic. You're not being weak. You're not stuck because something is wrong with you. You're stuck because no one ever gave you the language for what you're carrying. And without the language, You can't process it. Without processing it, you can't set it down or let it go. So I've been talking about what grief costs, what it accumulates into when it goes unprocessed, and all that is real. And again, to be more specific, not grief itself, but the things that accompany grief, the fear, the depression, the anxiety, et cetera. But I'm telling you, I'd be doing you a disservice if I left it here. Because grief, the grief event, isn't only a wound. It's also a teacher. For a lot of people, myself included, it turns out to be the most important one they ever had. Now, I know that may be hard to hear if you're in the middle of a storm and you're saying, please don't try to tell me that this is all going to be okay. Please don't tell me that I should be grateful for this grief or for this wound. And I'm not telling you to be grateful for the wound at all. But I'm telling you this as someone who's 10 years out past the passing of my daughter, 11 years this month, it's coming up. I can tell you that grief is not only a wound. And I've talked to literally hundreds of people now for whom grief has been more than a wound. It's been a teacher, a very important teacher, probably the most important teacher. Now, I want to be clear here. I'm not saying that everything happens for a reason. I actually happen to believe that, but I've also told you I'm not going to ask you to believe things without evidence, and I'm not prepared to give you the evidence right now. So let's just set that aside. And let's say that not everything happens for a reason. Just random stuff happens. What I'm saying is this, even if you believe that, we human beings are meaning-making creatures. What we do with our losses, the sense we make of them, what we allow them to grow in us, is some of the most important work we'll ever do. So here's the thing. This event that happened to you, you might want to believe that it happened for a reason, as I said, but we're not going to go there. Even if there's no metaphysical thing behind why it happened, you get to determine what you do with it. You get to determine what meaning you assign to it, whether it's a good thing, whether it's a bad thing, whether it's a neutral thing. Because frankly, events around us don't have good, bad to them. It's what we assign to them. It's what this, the meaning that we make of it. Let's take a football game, for example, a soccer game, but any kind of a sport. In every match, there's going to be a winner and there's going to be a loser. So for that match, the winner is going to feel like it was a good outcome. The loser is going to feel like it's a bad outcome. It's the same outcome. So the meaning that we assign to it changes depending upon how we look at it. So as we're talking about grief and we're talking about all of the negatives that come along with it, let's talk about what grief can actually produce. Grief can place in you a compassion that you couldn't have manufactured any other way. There's a kind of understanding that only comes from having been through something. I tell you, as I'm talking to clients now, a lot of times they'll tell me, I've worked with other grief counselors or grief therapists, which I am neither. I'm not a medical person. I'm a grief guide or a grief coach. But they've told me, I've worked with other people and there's nothing really been like working with you. Why is that? It's not because I'm some special magical person. I'm not. But I have a kind of understanding that comes only from having been through something. I don't speak from reading a book about grief. I've read a lot of them. I've gone through certification, but it still doesn't give you what sitting across from someone in real pain and knowing in your body what that feels like. That gives me a connection with my clients that you can't have without having gone through that. The people who I've met who are the most genuinely compassionate people, the people that you want to be around, not performatively sympathetic, but actually compassionate, they've all been ones who have been through significant loss. I don't think that's a coincidence. I think by going through those losses, it develops compassion in us. It allows us to put ourselves in a place with that other person that we're sitting across from that you can't get without having gone through something like that. Now, that doesn't mean to understand or to work with someone who's lost a spouse, for example, you have to have lost a spouse. Or someone's lost a child, you have to have lost a child. No, not at all. I haven't lost a spouse, and I've worked with lots of people who have. But I do know what a loss feels like. And, you know, as I was saying earlier, we've all had some sort of loss, but the grief event, it seems like the bigger the event, the more the opportunity there is for developing this compassion.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
The station that makes you feel good.
What also grief can do for you is it can give you a clarity about what actually matters. Loss is a brutal editor. When something important is taken from you, a lot of the things that were filling your days tend to fall away. The games we play with status, wanting to be more important that are seen as higher than another person. The low-grade resentments that you were carrying around, they just don't seem to matter anymore. It's like we put things in perspective and we make them proportionate. And once we've had this major loss and we realize that things could be a whole lot worse, we tend to stop sweating the small stuff. There's a book called Don't Sweat the Small Stuff. And I think the subtitle was, or it should be, Everything is Small Stuff. You know, what we go through here seems very big a lot of times until we go through something that's even much worse. So people who've been through serious loss often does describe a shift in what they can tolerate, frankly, wasting time on, because they realize time is the thing that's precious. Life gets shorter. Life gets more real. It's not a small thing. It really helps to clarify our life. And I will say this, as I'm getting older myself, just having turned 65 a couple of weeks ago, and having seen how loss can come at any time, it really helps you to focus down on what's important. And actually, life gets sharper and brighter as we realize that it's not unlimited. Grief can also give us redirection or inspiration. Some of the most important work in the world gets done by people who are pointed toward it by grief. Frankly, I'm one of them. I didn't choose to do this work because it sounded interesting. It's not like I was in sixth grade or in high school and I went to my career counselor and said, I want to talk about death when I grow up. I chose it because losing Shana blew up the life I had. And it left me standing in the wreckage, trying to figure out what was actually true. Now, the work I do now, I wouldn't trade it. I wouldn't trade it at all. But I have to say this also, I wouldn't have found it any other way. And when I talk to people that have written the books that I read and are going on the podcast that I'm listening to, these are people who have been redirected. They have their lives changed by these events that have happened to them. These we call spiritually transformative experiences. Near-death experiences are one form of that. It's really well known. You know, people have a thing where they actually die and they cross over and they come back. But there are other types of spiritually transformative experiences too. One of them can be losing a person. It's a wake-up call. It's a redirection. Look at the people behind hospice care, grief support organizations, consciousness research, after-death communication work. A huge proportion of those people arrive because of a loss. Grief sent them somewhere where they were needed. And as we've expanded the definition of grief here, as we did at the beginning of the program today, you can realize it's not necessarily the loss of a person. It may be that they had a childhood that was really, really rough, or it may be that they were in an abusive relationship. It may have been that they had a medical scare. There could be other types of losses that might direct people to doing something different. The other thing about grief, it can either build strength in you or reveal a strength you didn't know you had. I've heard this from more grieving people I can count. I didn't know I could survive this. And I want to say this also very clearly. You may be going through something right now where you feel like you can't survive it. I've been there. When my daughter passed away, I literally did not think I could survive it. And I know a lot of people, when they've lost a spouse, they've said the same thing. You don't believe you can survive. You don't believe you have what it takes. And it's really interesting because well-meaning people will say to you, I don't know how you do it. I couldn't do this. First of all, I want to say to you, if you said that to someone, I don't want to make you feel guilty, but that can be taken in a way that's not so great. Because what you're kind of saying is your loss of your child or your spouse is not as important to you because it didn't break you. It didn't kill you like it would kill me. I know that's not what you mean, but that's sometimes what a grieving person will hear. So be very careful when you say that. And also know that a lot of times we are just barely hanging on. And what you see as strength is merely us trying to survive. We're not thriving. We're just trying to stay upright. But the thing is that people do survive things that they did not think they could possibly survive. And I've talked to people who've been through horrific things. Like I'm talking about one parent murdering another or losing two children in a single house fire or losing a wife and two children in a house fire or, you know, on and on and on. Things that you might say, wow, I could never survive that. I could never find joy again. But they did, and they've surprised themselves. The loss revealed that in them, or maybe they actually built it. I don't know which. People ask me if grief gets easier, and I'm like, yes, it does. I think I'm not sure if it gets easier or we get stronger or it's a combination of the both. I think it's a combination of the two. I think it does get a little easier, but I know it also builds strength in us. And I always use the analogy of going to a gym. You know, if you're out of shape and you go to the gym and someone hands you 10-pound dumbbells and says to do bicep curls, you're probably going to struggle. But if you go and you keep going, you do those curls with the 10-pound weights and then you move up to 15 pounds and 20 pounds, eventually you get stronger. The weight doesn't get lighter, but you get stronger. So that thriver we talked about, the thriver that's been buried, a lot of times comes out on the other side of metabolized grief. And it's often different. Well, I'm not going to say it's different from the one that went in. It's just been revealed. And I believe that thriver is always there, but sometimes it gets buried. There's a saying that says, the cracks are where the light can shine in. So the grief cracks that's open, and we can take in that light, and the thriver can come forward. So we come out more resilient, more honest, more awake to what matters. I want to be careful here because grief education can tip into a kind of forced optimism. Everything's a lesson. Every storm makes you stronger. And that framing can end up being just another way of dismissing the pain. I never, ever, ever want to dismiss the pain. I never want to say the pain doesn't suck. I worked with a client just recently who has lost their spouse. And I'm like, yes, this sucks. Let's say that clearly. If we had a column of sucks versus benefits or silver linings or whatever you want to call it, there's a big old thing on that suck column. So grief is genuinely terrible. Real loss takes real things. So the fact that something good can come from something doesn't make the loss okay. And it doesn't balance the ledger. This isn't a balance sheet where we can say, okay, well, I got all these good things on this side, so therefore the bad thing doesn't count. The bad thing's still there. But what it does mean is the story isn't over at the loss. That's all I'm saying. The loss is not the last word. And I'm telling you, as sure as I'm sitting here, I thought it was the last word for me. When I say planted, not buried, that's not just a tagline for the show. It's actually a description of what happens when grief is metabolized rather than suppressed. I was telling you, I see grief sometimes, or these emotions as being stuck in the body. when we plant something and we bury something, it's the exact same motion. But we call it plant it versus bury it because of the intent. When we plant something, we expect it to grow. We expect it to be metabolized, to be changed, to be transformed. That's what we can do with these things we're talking about. That's what I'm talking about when I say these things can come from the grief. Something goes into the ground that was hard and dark and it felt like an ending, and something very different came up. That's what we're trying to get to. I want to give you something this week to actually do, not to think about doing. I want you to actually do this. You can do it now or you can do it later. This is not complicated. Just remember, if you can't do it right now, get a piece of paper, and I want you to draw a horizontal line across the paper. On the left end of the line, write the year you were born. On the right end of the line, write today's date. So this line is going to be a timeline representing your life from the time you were born up until now. Now, using everything that we've talked about today, every kind of storm, every kind of loss, mark the events on that line, not just the deaths, but all of it. So approximate date, year, if you remember the month, that's fine. But write the events on the line. The year that you had to move and you didn't want to move when you were a child, when your parents got divorced, the friendships that ended and you never understood why, the job that went away, the relationship that failed, the dream you stopped letting yourself have, the moment something shifted, you became a more guarded version of yourself. So use that expanded definition we've talked about today. If it felt like a loss, it goes on the line. You may have to get a bigger piece of paper, but take your time with this. And some of these things you haven't thought about in years. And you don't have to do it on paper. If you're a computer kind of person, you want to pull out notes on your phone or a document, you can start putting the dates in there. But just the approximate date and the loss. And some of these things, again, you haven't thought about them in years. Some of them you've been actively not thinking about. But let each one of them come out. And when you've got them all written down, I want you to look at each one and ask a second question. Not what did this take from me, but I want you to ask this. What did it give me? What did you learn from it? How did it shape you in a way that you'd keep if you could choose? Did it maybe make you more compassionate? Did it show you what you were actually made of? Did it push you somewhere, a direction, a relationship, a purpose that you wouldn't have found otherwise? Did it make you stronger in a certain sense? Did you learn maybe from a relationship, that you had what I don't want in my next relationship? I'd say that everything is here to teach us something. I was married when I was very young. It didn't last very long. It was a really quick flame out of a relationship. But I tell you, I learned a lot in that relationship. I learned what kind of person that I couldn't be with. I learned how not to treat someone and how not to allow someone to treat me. So even though it was a very painful lesson, and even though overall I would say it was a pretty terrible event in my life, I learned from it. So you don't have to force this. Not every loss on that line was going to have a clean answer yet. You may not have something good that came out of it, and that's okay. You don't have to force it. That's the exercise. The line, the losses, and then what came from them. Two sides of the same life, both real and both yours. And this is the reframing that we're talking about. Now, again, I'm going to be very careful with this. I want to say this doesn't take away the fact that these were losses, but what have the losses taught us? What can we do with those losses? And also understand how they may have forced your thriver underneath a little bit, how your watcher may have been quieted down a little bit, and how your survivor might have been built up from those. And how maybe you can think about, how do I get back to that? How do I understand that life isn't just about loss? And even the things I perceived about loss were not necessarily all bad. That I'm the person I am now because of the accumulation of these so-called losses. I may be older and wiser and know what not to do and what to do and have more compassion. So I want you to think about your life in that way as you go through that. So last week I said grief is what happens because love doesn't end. This week I want to add something to that. Grief is also what happens when parts of us, our dreams, our identities, our futures, versions of ourself, don't get to live the life that they were supposed to have or the life we thought they were supposed to have. That's really pretty much what grief is. Grief is when we have an expected outcome, a desired outcome, and we don't get that outcome. And as we define grief that way, we're expanding it out a little bit from just the loss of a person. And most of us are carrying those losses without any language for them at all, not even realizing there were losses, not even able to identify them. Well, now you have the language. It's called invisible loss. You know that you may be living in the waiting room, waiting for something to happen, waiting for something to change. The survivor that protected you when you needed it and is still running your life when you don't. You recognize that survivor now. The survivor, by the way, is not your enemy. We're not trying to get rid of the survivor. We want to thank the survivor for protecting us. But maybe we don't need that survivor so much now. We want to let the watcher come out, and we want to let the thriver come back. You're not stuck because something is wrong with you. You're stuck because you've been carrying something real that nobody taught you to name. So I want you to name it. Draw the line. Start there. Now, if you want to go deeper, you can feel free to contact me through my Substack, or you can find me at grieftogrowth.com, grief2growth.com. My Grief to Growth podcast has hundreds of episodes. You can check it out there, but I'm going to be right here on UK Health Radio every week on After the Storm. So next week, if grief is bigger than we thought, and it definitely is, then so is health itself. We're going to look at what health actually means. The conventional definition is too small for the kind of creature you actually are. So I'll see you then. Until next time, remember, planted, not buried. Thank you for spending this time with me on After the Storm. If today's conversation resonated with you, I'd love to continue the journey together. You can find more of my work at www.grieftogrowth.com. That's grief, G-R-I-E-F, the numeral 2, growth.com. Until next week, remember, After the Storm is where the healing begins.